Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, it is ESPN's Brady Henderson. Brady, I have a question for you before we get to any Seahawks talk at all. Okay. Have you ever made a dumb bet?
Have I ever made a dumb bet?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
What was the last dumb bet that you made?
It's probably golf related. I make a lot of dumb bets on the golf course. That probably wouldn't surprise a lot of people, but I can't think of one specifically, but probably
that's
like,
where they happen.
I bet you I can drive this green that's, you know, way out of my driving range, you know, that I could never do only except for maybe 1 out of 100, something like that.
Feeling real confident in the moment. That was what I did. Like we're just about to call you. We're in the break and I'm having a little snack. And so I crinkle up the paper towel and it's a pretty like hefty size. So I go to throw it into the garbage can. I don't make it. Jake and Curtis make fun of me. I go back to make it and I say, I will pay one of you $10 if you can make it from here. Because this distance, it's just a paper towel. And Jake, would you say this distance from that garbage can to the entire wall, what's that, like maybe 10 feet, 12?
10 feet at the most,
about
yes.
10 feet. And then I don't know why I challenged a former quarterback and a quarterback coach to make a crumpled up paper into a wastebasket. That's essentially what I challenged him to do, thinking there would be no chance.
She challenged me, Brady, get this, she challenged me $10. She challenged me $10.
So she challenged a former professional thrower of things to throw something.
Because at the time it seemed, and anyways, the long story short is I don't have $10 anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say,
I would bet if I were getting in on the betting, I would take Jake in that bet. No offense, Stacey.
No, it's understandable.
He used to throw things for a living, so...
Brady,
listen to my better
the easiest
judgment.
$10 I've ever made. I just accepted it in my Venmo account.
everything.
Yeah, it's been a good Friday so far. Brady... Yeah. Thanks for coming on with us, man. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
And we're obviously you talked to Bobby Wagner, you talked to DJ Reed, you talked to Russell Wilson. Let's start there with Russ. What was your biggest impression of his comments?
Yeah, I think he said largely what I thought he would say. I certainly did not expect him to double down on what he said in February. There was just no reason to, you know, I feel like he made his point. He got that off his chest. I think there were, as he said, you know, he was frustrated at the time and, he got that off his chest and he kind of had to deal with the fallout from that. And so I never expected him to double down. I thought that he would do what he did, which was, you know, downplay the drama or whatever you want to call it and really look forward. And that's exactly what he did. And, so that went off as I expected it to. I think that he did a good job of kind of controlling, you know, the I don't want to say damage, but just downplaying it and really kind of moving past it, because there was no need for him to rehash everything and to double down on it. There was just no point in doing that, in my opinion.
Brady, I know that we're probably going to get back to this conversation, but just before I forget to ask, you were out at OTAs and you were watching these guys. I know that reporters are limited in some of what they can say, and not only that, but that guys are basically out there just going through basic drills and stuff. But is there anything that stood out to you as far as guys that were there, guys that were healthy, or guys that weren't?
The first name that pops to mind is Marquise Blair. I saw him out there. He was out there, I believe, both days. He was definitely out there earlier in the week, Tuesday, when we were out there. So we were able to watch two of the four OTAs this week. I noticed him on Tuesday. And like you said, they're not doing – it's not, you know, full speed, you know, a lot of team stuff like you would see maybe later on in the offseason in training camp. So I feel like, you know, they're using this week to kind of ramp up to OTAs next week, especially with a lot of those veteran players – who weren't there for the start of the voluntary offseason program, so who weren't there for the first six or whatever it was, OTAs. So definitely a low tempo. But, yeah, noticing Marquise Blair out there, that was kind of a reminder that he's definitely going to factor into this defense this season. And it's kind of easy to forget about him just because, you know, he got injured in week two of last season. But the timing of that injury being so early in the season, I think, worked in his favor in terms of getting back getting back, being on pace to be back by the start of this season. And so He was the one guy that stood out. Yesterday you saw a lot of the guys that weren't, that we didn't see on Tuesday, were there. Quandre Diggs, Carlos Dunlap, Al Woods, guys like that. And so, still no Dwayne Brown, still no Chris Carson, still no Tyler Lockett, but I would imagine that those guys are going to be there next week for the mandatory minicamp. Remember, the OTAs are voluntary. Minicamp is mandatory, and so anybody who skips those would be subject to fines, and I can't imagine that we'll see those guys skip those.
Brady, you bring up Marquise Blair, and you guys were talking to Bobby Wagner yesterday, and obviously he was still very adamant that, hey, the door's not closed on KJ Wright, and hopes to see him here in Seattle still, advocating for his guy, one of his closest friends, and obviously very, very successful run together as teammates. Do you think that Marquise Blair or Daryl Taylor has more of a bigger impact on the potential signing of KJ Wright back here?
I think it's more so Daryl Taylor. And, you know, like Bobby Wagner said, I don't think the door is entirely closed on KJ Wright, but at this rate, I think it would take either an injury to somebody, one of the three starting linebackers, and or, Daryl Taylor, for whatever reason, just not taking hold of that job. And, you know, I really, the more I've looked into this and the more I've researched it, the more I get the impression that it's not a matter of that they're trying Daryl Taylor at strong side linebacker because KJ Wright is unsigned. I almost think that it's the opposite of that, meaning that, you know, KJ Wright is unsigned because they want Daryl Taylor to fill that role. And, you know, every NFL team always wants to get younger, faster, and cheaper. And Daryl Taylor accomplishes all three of those things over KJ Wright. He's definitely younger, being in his second season. I would imagine he's faster, just being, you know, 24 years old as opposed to, you know, a 10-year veteran like KJ Wright. And he's certainly cheaper than whatever it would take to bring back KJ Wright. So I think any team would have appeal to any team. But I think for this team, they also, they want a pass rusher in that role. They want somebody who can double as a pass rusher, who can play strong side linebacker on early downs and put his hand in the dirt in passing situations. And KJ Wright, you know, you guys know this, he's an excellent blitzer off the edge, but he's not somebody who's going to put his hand in the ground and rush the quarterback like a traditional pass rusher. And so I really think that they want somebody like Daryl Taylor in that role. Remember, that's why they brought Bruce Irvin back last year to fill that role. Irvin got hurt. They reshuffled the lineup, but it seems clear to me that they want somebody like Daryl Taylor in that role. And maybe somebody gets hurt. Maybe Daryl Taylor, it just doesn't work. But at this point, I think that's what it would take for KJ Wright to be back.
Now, where's Cody Barton fit with all of this? Is he going to be back up to Daryl Taylor, back up to either spot, a special teamer? I mean, what's kind of going to be his primary role then, presumably?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I could see them giving him, you know, a look at, I mean, you know, it's always a competition there, and Pete Carroll's, I think, going to give him a fair shot. But again, he's more of the KJ Wright, you know, different body style, obviously, but he's more of a traditional linebacker who's a linebacker and not a linebacker slash a pass rusher. And so, you know, I think he gives them some really good versatility. I do think that there's people in the building who consider him a starting caliber player. And if it weren't for Daryl Taylor, you know, maybe he would get a better shot there. But, that's a good guy to have. If he's not going to start, that's a really good guy to have as your fourth linebacker who could play some different spots. I believe he's played strong side. He started some games on the strong side, and I think he's played on the weak side as well. And so that's a pretty good piece to have as your fourth linebacker if one of those guys goes down. But I really think that they would much rather have, again, the more versatile guy like Daryl Taylor on the strong side.
You know, Brady, coming back to Russell Wilson, you know, there were a bunch of things that he had said and mentioned, but one of the questions that you had kind of pointed on is, you know, coming to the idea of, look, him putting out teams and pressing him on how is this a media creation, things of that nature. What did you take away from his answers to that?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. To which questions are you talking about?
To the questions that he put out, you know, the four list of teams and how there was confusion that maybe this had been overblown. You know, what part of it was overblown? What did you make of his answers to that?
I got you. Yeah, that was one question that he was asked a few times, is why did his agent put out the list of four teams, giving that list of four teams to Adam Schefter? I believe that was in late February when after The Athletic published his story. And, Russell, the answer that we got from Russell was that he felt like he needed to set the record straight that he did not request a trade. And I don't recall ever seeing any hard news reports stating that he had requested a trade, but I imagine that there were probably a lot of people that were jumping to that conclusion, just based on what had been written, what he had said, what he had said earlier that month when he voiced his frustrations and then the Athletic story came out. I think people may have concluded that he wanted out, and maybe Russell was reacting to that, because I don't remember seeing any hard news reports stating that he had requested a trade. And then he said that, just the rumor mill was buzzing with, teams that maybe he might go to, or maybe that would make a trade for him. And he said that they put those list of four teams out, just to set the record straight there. And so I think he got several questions about that, just because that was unclear. And it seemed like that was kind of the height of the drama there, is when that list came out, because that, I think, made the whole thing seem a lot more real to people, where, hey, Russell Wilson is now putting this list of teams out that he might go to. And again, saying that he, at the time, that he did not ask for a trade. I think that took the story to another level. And so I think that's why he was asked a few questions about that yesterday.
Brady, is there any news on Jamal Adams? Have we heard why he's going to be there? Why hasn't he been there? Will he be there at mandatory minicamp? Where they're at in their contract situation?
Yeah, so from what I understand, I checked on this a week or so ago, and I was told that they have had the Seahawks and Jamal Adams' agent, Kevin Connor, have had some initial negotiations. As of when I checked on this a week or so ago, there had not been a ton of progress made, but there is still optimism in the organization that they're going to get a deal done. And, the thing that I look at is, I think it can be informative to look at previous big deals that the agent has done. And in this case, the last big deal that Kevin Connor did was the extension that the Bills gave Tre'Davious White, their all-pro cornerback, last year. And that deal didn't get done until, I think it was the week before the season, it was September 5th or something like that. And so that may have been agent driven. That may have been the agent kind of slow playing things and waiting for, the last minute, knowing that, hey, once you get to September, at that point, the player is only, 6 months away from free agency. And mm-hmm. so maybe the thought there is that by that point, maybe the team might be more inclined to kind of panic and give in, knowing that the player is that close to free agency. So I kind of wonder if that's the MO, if that was the MO on the agent's part there, and if that's going to be the similar play this year. And then that raises an interesting question of, okay, if there's no deal done by late July, training camp starts, July 30th, there's no deal by then, what does Adams do? Does he not show up at all? Does he show up and kind of do what Bobby Wagner did a couple years ago? Remember, Wagner's deal was getting finalized early in training camp in 2019. He was there, was on the field, but wasn't taking part in drills. So does Adams do something like that? That's going to be something to monitor. But in terms of next week's minicamp, I don't know what his plan is. I imagine that he would be there, but I mean, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't even say that, because I really don't know. Players, again, if they don't attend mandatory minicamp, they are subject to fine. So I could see that being enough incentive for Adams to show up. But again, maybe he goes the Wagner route and he's there, but he doesn't really participate.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to – Jake and I have both been operating with the assumption he'd be there for mandatory minicamp, so I think it's fair to just kind of expect it for now, and then we'll deal with the news if he's not. Very last question, just a quick one for me, Brady. Are there any numbers that just fans should keep in mind when it comes to Jamal Adams' deal, a number he may be looking at versus what the team would probably not want to surpass?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know any of this for a fact. I'm just sort of, this is my own, speculation on it. The top of the safety market is $15.25 million. I believe that's the number that Justin Simmons recently got. And so I would imagine that if the Seahawks, if they wanted to make him the highest paid safety and just, barely edge that number, I imagine that they would do that. I just wonder if Jamal Adams is going to want to get paid more like a pass rusher. And, now you're not talking about, $15 million and change. You're talking more $17, $18 million, maybe $19 million. And, again, I haven't heard that from Adams. I haven't heard that from anybody. I just wonder that if he's going to want to be paid like a pass rusher, since he is a pass rusher for all intents and purposes. He's technically a strong safety, but that's the way he impacts the game most. He led the team with 9.5 sacks last year, set the single season record for a defensive back. And so that is the one area where these negotiations could get interesting. If he says, no, I don't want to be paid like a safety, I want to be paid like a pass rusher. I would imagine that he'll at least ask that. It's just, and in that case, it's just going to be a matter of, you know, how much does he dig his heels in the ground on that.
Okay, so just so I know for sure, and everyone listening knows for sure, it's your understanding that Adams and the team have at least begun these conversations, but for all we know, they may still be at two different numbers here.
Yeah, my understanding is that they have had negotiations, but as of a week or so ago when I checked on this, there had not been a ton of progress being made. And again, gotcha. I would not be surprised if this goes all the way to September.
Whew, man, I don't like hearing that, but obviously going to be a story to follow. He is Brady Henderson. You can read his work at ESPN.com. Fantastic Seahawks coverage and always a fantastic interview. Brady, thanks so much. Enjoy your weekend.
All right, you too. Thanks for having me. Take care.
See ya. All right, that was Brady Henderson of ESPN. And one thing that stands out, Jake, him saying that according to his sources, according to what he's been hearing, the Seahawks and Jamal Adams have at one point begun negotiating for that deal, but that as of a week ago, there hadn't been much movement there, anticipating it's possible that they could be moving that conversation, that deal, all the way into September.
Yeah.
I was expecting like an end of July. I'm not feeling great about that. I'm not panicking, but this is a tough one. This is a tough one because of specifically the stats Adams had last year. People pay for sacks. There's a premium on sacks. When you are a safety, a strong safety is paid less than a free safety, who's paid less than a top corner, who's paid less than a top defensive end. When you are a safety who's getting more sacks than anyone on the team and has the 11th most sacks in the league,
right,
you're going to be looking for money.
You are going to be looking for money, and that's why this negotiation was always going to be a very, very challenging one. And I have said the most challenging yet in, you know, for the Pete Carroll, John Schneider era. I mean, they have dealt with some very difficult situations in the past, but I don't think there's none that is – there is not – all the other – contracts, there may have been some drama attached with it, but the market said, here is what the market is. Russell Wilson, for as much drama as there was in the media, the market was at 34 million at the time, 33.5. Russell was going to be after 35. Bobby Wagner, there was 17 mil, that was the highest contract. He was going to be after 18.
Mm-hmm.
And you go down the list, and it was very, very easy to point out that basically every player just wanted to get one more $1 million earning over the next guy that was already the top guy. Whereas in Jamal Adams, he wants to expand the market. He doesn't want to be paid as a strong safety.
Because he's more than a strong safety.
He is more than a strong safety. He is utilized as a very versatile player. He wants to be paid amongst some of the best defensive players in football. That's how he views himself. That's how he believes his game, you know, his impact of his game can be for this team. And when you look at the numbers that he was able to put together last year when healthy, it's hard to argue against that in terms of sack numbers, in terms of when he's playing good football and coverage, the effect that he can have in the run game. He is one of the better defensive players in football. Now, the problem is that in the NFL, the way that the free agent market works is it's based and slotted off of position. And if you are a strong safety, if you are a free safety, if you're a corner, you get paid a certain amount of money. Your position matches your value. And for Jamal Adams, he's saying, heck no. Mm-hmm. Heck with that. My position does not match my value or what I bring to the table. And I want more than that. If that was truly the case, the Seattle Seahawks would be paying Jamal Adams probably $16.5 million is what that contract would be when it was all said and done. When Jamal Adams plays on the field and what he's going after, he's going $18 to $20 million. That's what he wants, and I still ultimately think that they will settle in around $18, but he wants to push the market far and above, I think, what the Seahawks want, and the Seahawks are not, like, they are not a team that just gets, you know, the wool pulled over their eyes. They are hard negotiators. They don't mess around when it comes to negotiations.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried, at least when it comes to what I think the Seahawks. I think the Seahawks are a team that will stick to their guns. I've seen a couple questions just about actual finances, like what are some of the top contracts at this position. So I'll take 10 seconds just to say this. The top safety contract is actually free safety. It's Justin Simmons. His average per year is about 15.2. And all of these averages, it's heavier toward the latter half of the contract. So some years are going to be like six, like Jake said, 16.5 or whatever. Highest paid strong safety. So same position is going to be Buda Baker with the Cardinals at 14.75 average annual value. Now, someone texted in saying maybe he should get paid more like a linebacker. Well, now you're looking at the top paid inside linebacker being Bobby Wagner at $18 million. You look at the top paid defensive ends, you're getting into the low 20s there. Now, you can say, well, he's got the sack total. Defensive ends, though, that's a different ball game. I don't know that he can make the best argument that he should be paid like a top-tier edge rusher, particularly when this team's going to say, that's fantastic. Can you also help us in coverage, though? Because we still need help there. But it is fair for him, certainly, to look to get paid as the best safety. It's a question of how much more does he want? How much more does he want than the best safety? Are you going to run into a sticky situation if he gets more than Bobby Wagner, if he's surpassing $18 million? And here's the other question. The Seahawks have done this to a much smaller degree, but I don't actually think this would happen, but the Seahawks are not afraid to take an L and admit a mistake and move on from something, even if it means a loss for them.
True.
The Percy Harvin contract is a
prime example.
Trading someone when he still had value with them, when they were still paying quite a bit of dead cap money to him, trading him away because they said, you know what, we're wiping our hands, it wasn't the right move for us, and we're moving on, even though at the time it didn't make a lot of sense to anyone, and it seemed like, well, you're just admitting that you made a mistake. It's different when it comes to Jamal Adams because he gave up two first rounders, and by all appearances, he has been a great teammate, a great part of the team. But I think that this team has proven there is a limit they have.
There is a limit that they have, but make no mistake. I mean, when Pete Carroll and John Schneider, when they go out there, and specifically Pete Carroll is out there and saying in his press conference that Jamal Adams is going to be a part of this franchise for a long time, he doesn't just say that and not execute and fall through on that. That has not happened. Not happened once. And this would be the first time that has happened. And I don't see that being the case here. I don't think they lose out on Jamal Adams. They gave up too much for him. They have too big of plans for him. They believe that he can be one of the staple leaders of this franchise and be one of the true difference makers for this team that is in win mode now. They are, I believe that when you look at their situation with Jamal, they need to pay him. That's always been the case. Now it's just a matter of how far apart they are. And I believe as of right now, when you talk about Brady Henderson and these conversations not going very smoothly, not smoothly, but there's not a whole lot of steam that is behind these contracts negotiations right now, it's because they are so far apart at the moment. And we'll see if they can inch closer and closer and closer as training camp comes along.
OneNFL.com reporter has his ideal landing spot for Richard Sherman, and it is not Seattle. That's coming your way next in NFL headlines.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Taking a look around the NFL, see what we have here. We'll start with Richard Sherman. You guys know him. Now, he has been someone that is still a free agent. And as a very talented cornerback, even if in his later years as a player, he could still, I think many would agree, be a helpful addition to a very untested Seahawks cornerback room. Pete Carroll's been asked about him a number of times at OTAs and then earlier during the draft and said the door isn't closed, but right now they seem pretty happy with the cornerback room and the team that they have as a whole. Well, NFL.com's Jeff Chidia says that there is a team that should re-sign Richard Sherman, and that's his former team, most recent team, the 49ers. He says, as of right now, the best fit for Sherman remains San Francisco. He spent the last three seasons with that franchise and can still help its secondary even at 33. He says a lingering calf injury did limit Sherman, but he did still make it to the Pro Bowl in 2019 even then. And if he can be anywhere close to what he was 2 years ago, he can give their defense a boost.
I think that when you talk about their defense, okay, their defense to me is a group that I believe can improve with someone that has this veteran presence, but the point of where he's at in his career, this is where we had Joe Fan on yesterday, Stacey, right? And he was talking about what it, I asked the question, what is the big signing that the Seahawks could make right now that's out there? And what did Joe say? He said Sherm, right? And to me, at this stage of his career, I think he can help a team in terms of being somebody that isn't going to get beat over the top, that isn't going to get beat consistently. However, I don't believe he is that dynamic player that he once was that can truly be that impact level type of player. And I believe you're bringing him more on to be a mentor, to be a guy that keeps everybody sharp around him. There's other positives that he can bring to the table, but if you think you're going to get the Richard Sherman of even, you know, a couple seasons ago,
2019.
Yeah, 2019, that level of production on the field, I'm not sure I'm totally buying that.
I think it's fair. I just would love to continue to see both him and KJ Wright, for that matter, find opportunities, places. I think they both still have it in them.
KJ Wright, absolutely. Richard Sherman, absolutely. I'd be curious to see him on the field, no doubt, but I believe that KJ to me is different. I think KJ Wright can still play high level, impact changing football. It's just, unfortunately, it's not at a premier position like Will linebacker anymore. It's more of in a situational role like Sam linebacker, which is the reason why his market is not vast. It's why people aren't just banging down his door to sign him.
Before I forget, you guys, I am going to jump to this next story, but we are doing What I Need to Know coming your way, and in just a little over 10 minutes, so you don't have to wait until 45 after. You can get those questions in now to the Mac and Jack's text line, 710-710. Send any question you have, any number of questions you have about anything, for What I Need to Know coming your way at 45 after. Next story here, going to another NFC West neighbor. So on Thursday day, Sean McVay, head coach of the Rams, had a press conference where he talked about some of the team's new additions. And in cut number 28, he had this to say about Matt Stafford.
I think I've been very happy. Everybody says, man, you just seem like you're in a better mood this offseason. I said, you're damn right I am. So this guy, he's a special guy. I think one of the best ways that I can describe him, when you hear people that have been around him, There's a known confidence where when he walks into a room, you always feel his presence, but he's got a great humility about himself that everybody loves being around him. And he's one of those guys that I think is a true igniter. It makes everybody around him better. I feel like I've become a better coach in the few months that we've been able to spend together. And we're looking forward to doing a lot of good things together.
First things first, I don't know if it's just the sound of where he is. It sounds like he's at an open mic night and he's about to make a joke about Matt Stafford. Like that,
with wall behind
him.
Yeah.
It sounds like there's bad acoustics and like an audience where like half the audience is talking and drinking,
about this,
half of them are watching.
How about this calamari in front of us, huh?
Right. Then because he said, never been happier, Stafford is maybe a better coach, it was written, and of course fans were reading it and thinking, oh, is this like a slight toward Jared Goff? So then Sean McVay got mad, and he had another press conference later that evening.
Yes.
And had this to say in cut 29.
You know, I hate that I even have to say this, but I think I made a comment earlier that was definitely taken out of context. I am very excited. I have been in a good mood because of the confidence I have in this team, but by no means is that a slight to anybody, you know, like Jared, who has done a phenomenal job for the last 4 years here. You know, I hated that I even have to address that, but I do think, out of respect for him and all the good things he's done, I am in a good mood, but that doesn't mean it's not because we're working together or because of just Stafford exclusively. There's a lot of good things going on that I feel really good about and I'm confident about. So don't twist my words when I didn't say that.
Sean, no one twisted your words. You came out and in a press conference, you said you'd never been happier and Stafford has made you a better coach. Then people wrote a quote. It was just a quote that you said that. You got mad that you said something without clarifying it. In the moment, what I would have said or someone would have said is like, and look, I don't mean this as a slight toward Goff. I'm really happy to have Stafford here. I know him. This is going to be fun. And guess what? You're in an industry where people are going to constantly mishear you. People mishear me and Jake all the time.
But nobody misheard him.
Nobody no one misheard you. It's what you said. Stop getting mad at people for twisting your words when what in reality you just regret that you said that without context.
You do regret
Be
that you
real.
Said that.
Get over yourself. Seriously, it makes me so mad.
Well, it makes me mad.
Who are
because,
you blaming right now?
Well, the thing is that it's how do you not see where people are going to go to? He knows what he's doing. Why are you happy this year compared to last year? The only thing that's changed is the quarterback situation. From Jared Goff to Matt Stafford. Matt Stafford all of a sudden has made you this great coach, but Jared Goff wasn't making you a great coach last year. That is the obvious connection there, and you're alluding to it yourself. He 100% was. So I have a problem with him coming after the media like that. And to me, this just seems, you know, there is, you know, when it comes to Sean McVay, I think there's a lot of pressure that's riding on this situation, and there will always be those comparisons, and he's always going to have to be mindful of that along the way. And this is one of those learning lessons for him, and we'll see if he continues to make that same kind of mistake. But he better get used to it. He better get used to it, because everybody's going to be paying attention to what he has to say in comparison and contrast to Stafford and Goff, because that's what the conversation was. There was serious drama. There was a serious rift between McVay and Goff. And hence the reason why they ended up trading Goff to the Lions for Stafford. So this is not a media creation. This is not twisting his words. It's exactly how he said it. And when I heard it, it's exactly where my mind went to.
Right? Okay, 206 says, not a Rams fan at all, but I think it's cool he cleared that up. Chill, Stace. First of all, I do appreciate you calling me Stace. I feel like we're friends now, and that's pretty dope, genuinely. Secondly, I think what it is, 206, is there is a bit of a frustration I have with people assuming that anyone did something with malintent, when in reality he just said something he probably didn't mean to say the way he did. No one's trying to mess you up or like get a gotcha moment. Someone, a random reporter just tweeted out what you said verbatim.
Right.
And I think to try to twist it as though other people are bad and wrong, I don't love that.
Last quick thing.
Yeah.
I think he practices in the mirror to sound just like John Gruden. It is eerie. Like, seriously, it is eerie. I thought I was listening to John Gruden. It's crazy.
Wild, man. He's 10 seconds away from making a center part. All right, you've got questions. We've got answers. Get your questions in now for what I need to know. Seahawks, Mariners, anything, whatever it is. Text it now, 710-710. What I need to know right around the corner.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
It is What I Need to Know, brought to you by All Red Heating, Cooling, Electric. Send your questions in, any question you have, 710-710, the Mac and Jax text line. And y'all, this text line is fire right now. I love all of you. You have amazing questions. I don't even know where to start, so we'll go with this. From the 206, what I need to know, how cute would it have been if Curtis had been running alongside Jake during American Ninja Warrior? Bros for life. Bros for life.
Hand in hand.
How about this one?
Well, if he would have been down, you know, like there's the course and then and then it's just off to the side.
Yes.
If he would have been there.
Running alongside to keep you going.
Here's the thing, I wish I could have done this when there was a live crowd. That everybody could have gone.
Stacey and I would have been there
1,000%.
You with guys, signs. You guys, signs, my family. I mean, I'm telling you, that would have been really, really cool. Instead, it was virtual. Still had my family there watching me, but telling you what, if Curtis was down there on that side,
I believe
rooting
it.
Me on.
Yeah. It would have just.
Who knows? Who knows?
You might have done a second lap.
Lifted you to the finale.
I probably would have.
They'd been like, hey, you already finished, man. You don't need to do it again.
You got the 12-foot wall. How about let's jack this thing
16.
Up, huh? Let's
How about this one? From the 206, what I need to know, do you like naps? And then they add, my college roommate used to nap and then get angry that people were being loud during the day. Here's what I'm going to start out by saying. I love a nap. I love napping. You cannot get mad at anyone if during business hours they're making noise. You are not allowed to do it. It is rude.
Okay.
To tell anyone like, hey, don't talk right now. It's 3 p.m. Some people are trying to sleep. Unless you have a weird schedule. If you're like a graveyard shift.
That's fine. But, yeah, I agree.
No, man. Come on.
But you better not be walking around or banging around just outside of my door because I'll be very upset at that point. I don't
live your life.
I have a love-hate relationship with naps, and according to my wife, Brooke, I don't respond well probably like 30 to 45 minutes after I take a nap, but I do enjoy a good long nap. It always hits the spot.
What I need to know, let's see, would you be a good sports agent? No. I know for a fact I would.
No, because that's basically a sales job. Yeah. I would be a terrible salesman.
I would be really good at it.
You think you would? I wouldn't be cutthroat enough. I'd be too nice. I'd be like, I don't know if it's okay for you guys. No worries if not.
The only thing that I'm not sure I'd be great at is going up to people just randomly and striking up a conversation. Like, that's the part as agents, you got to go to like the random all-star games and go try to, you know, talk up scouts and just basically go bug them and bother them like 24/7. That I would have a hard time with, but when it came to talking to them about my client and doing all that, I think I'd be pretty good at it.
How about this one? This is from Joseph in the 360. What I need to know. My question is, it's taken J.P. Crawford 3 years to get where he is. Do guys like Evan White, Kelnick, Lewis, and the pitchers have that same option of time? I don't think they do. What do you guys think?
Yes, you have to. You have to give them that ability to grow and develop. That's why seeing Kelnick, that's why I'm not panicking that he did not tear it up immediately as he came to the big league level. It's not that I don't want to see that. I want to see him come up and dominate, but he's still very young in this process. And we have seen time and time again that you have these big time prospects that need more time, need more seasoning, they need that experience. They struggle a little bit, and then in year two, year three, they take off. So you absolutely have to have that expectation there.
I don't think the Mariners had ever hinged their rebuild hopes on J.P. Crawford, which may have allowed him to play with a little bit more freedom. And he had already made it to the major leagues before becoming a Mariner. He was with the Philadelphia Phillies. He was one of their top prospects in their system for a long time and didn't really quite pan out the way that they had hoped. So I think J.P. is at a point in his career where it's like, you know what? Like, I'm kind of playing with house money right now, and you can tell that, you know, he's loose. He's confident in himself. It's a breath of fresh air to watch, especially, you know, with a lot of these guys who have come up over the last couple of years who have been pressing and whatnot. So, I've J.P. Crawford here to stay? I would hope so, at least in maybe shortstop or second base. Here's get somebody else.
Yeah, then great. Here's a fascinating one from the 360. Question. What I need to know. How is the need to feel accepted similar between Russell Wilson and A-Rod? Why do fans feel so different between the two? Now, I'm interpreting it as, like, is there a similarity there? What are the similarities and differences? To me, I think Russell Wilson, I do believe that he wants to stay here. With A-Rod, it was just getting paid, right? Am I simplifying that because I was a kid or younger when it was A-Rod, and so I'm just more unforgiving? It feels colder with A-Rod.
It does feel colder with A-Rod.
And the difference is the organization too, right? Like, the Seahawks are at a place
where bolted at his first opportunity
exactly.
to cash in.
It's different to me. But I like the question in terms of just like, do you think there's a feeling of being wanted on either for either party?
Yeah, I mean, Russell's his second contract with the team. So to me, it's very different. But, you know, I think maybe the struggles of Alex Rodriguez, I mean, they're talking about personality-wise wanting to be liked, right? I guess, but Alex Rodriguez, I think, I don't know if he did. I don't think A-Rod was ever viewed as a team guy. Am I wrong in saying that? I don't know if he was ever touted as a guy that was about
the
team, win at all costs. I mean, that's been Russell Wilson's brand since the moment he walked in the door. So I don't know. I don't think you can compare those two.
What I need to know, I just watched Draft Day the other day. Great movie, by the way. What's a better sports movie, Draft Day or Field of Dreams?
Field of Dreams.
I'm not going to lie. I'm going to say something that will make everyone mad at me.
I think I'm about to agree with you here.
Okay.
Draft Day is better.
Oh, yeah.
And also, I haven't seen Field of Dreams.
Oh. I was about to say Field of Dreams is a trash movie.
Woo!
And Kevin Costner is garbage. I don't like that movie at all. It is so
but
slow.
Kevin Costner's in Draft
Day. Curtis.
Yeah. Kevin Costner's in Draft Day.
Yeah, and he's great in that role. Yeah. I think that movie is genuinely pretty solid.
That
and I don't know why
better
it got
than
panned.
Field of Dreams.
I don't know why it was panned. I actually liked that movie. I
don't
know
why
parts
it was
of it
panned.
Are unrealistic,
Let's
but
go
like,
have
so
a catch.
Are literal angels
you
in the
have
outfield.
A catch. You play catch. You cannot have a catch.
Get out of here. Gosh.
I do so like Draft Day, but I think Field of Dreams,
yeah,
it's a classic.
You're overruled here.
It's a classic.
If it was hype train, you're left at the station.
That's fine.
That's okay, though. That's okay. I'm sure there are people on the text line that agree with you.
I'm okay with that.
All right, that'll do it for us today. He is Jake Heaps. Curtis Rogers here. I'm Stacey Ross. Do not go anywhere. Wyman and Bob are coming your way next on 710 ESPN Seattle.